listening to a poem. Steve Mason. Steve's former Army captain, combat veteran, and the National Poet Laureate of Vietnam Veterans of America. Take some time with us. Settle down, relax, and listen to this.
Happy birthday, Marines. Airborne.
Always.
I'm going to try this without my reading glasses. Most real men, hanging tough in their early 40s, would like the rest of us to think they could really handle one more war and two more women. But I know better. You have no more lies to tell. I have no more dreams to believe. I have seen it in your face. I'm sure you have noticed it in mine. That thousand-yard stare that does not look out, it looks in at the unutterable, unalterable truth of our war. The eye sees what the mind believes, and all that I know of war and all that I have heard of peace has me looking over my shoulder for that one bullet which still has my name on it, circling round and round the globe, waiting and circling, circling and waiting, until I break from cover and it takes its best, last shot. In the absence of time, the accuracy of guilt is assured. It is a cosmic marksman. Since Vietnam, I have run a zigzag course across the open fields of America, taking refuge in the inner cities from MacArthur Park to Washington Square, from Centennial Park to DuPont Circle. On the grassy urban knolls of America, I have seen an army of combat veterans hidden among the trees. Veterans of all our recent wars, each a part of the best of his generation, waiting in his teeth for peace. They do not lurk there on the backs of park benches, drooling into their socks above the remote turtled backs of chess players playing soldiers. They do not perch upon the gutter's lip of midnight fountains and noontime wishing wells like surrealistic gargoyles guarding the coins and simple wishes of young lovers. No, I have seen them in the quiet dignity of their aloneness, singly in the confidence of their own perspective, and always at the edges of the clearing, patrolling like perimeter guards or observing as primitive gods, each in his own way looks out to the park that he might see in to the truth. Some, like me, enjoy the comfortable base of a friendly tree that we might cock one eye to the center of the park toward the rearing bronze horsemen of other wars who would lead us backwards to glory. And daily they are fragged by a platoon of disgruntled pigeons saying it best for all of us. And with the other eye, we read the poetry of America the Beautiful as she combs her noontime hair and eats precise shrimp sandwiches and salad niçoise catered by Tupperware and never leaves a single crumb. No wonder America is the only country in the world that doesn't smell like food. And I remember you and me picnicking at the side of the Ho Chi Minh Trail in the rain, eating the limas and the ham from the can, sitting easy in our youth and our strength, driving hard bargains with each other for the sea ration goodies we unwrapped like Christmas presents. Somehow it really seemed to matter what he got versus what you got. He wasn't easy trading cheese and crackers for chocolate-covered peanut butter cookies and the pound cake, forget about it. I knew a guy would cut a hole in it and pretend it was a donut. And for 6 months I watched that and refused to ask him about it. And I did finally, and you guessed it, he hated pound cake. And remember the water biscuit that came in its own tin? I think they had the moxie to call it a cookie. It came with the marmalade and was made by that outfit in Chicago we promised to burn to the ground someday. Damn, how did your buddy the animal ever eat that shit? And then we washed the whole damn mess down with freckly-faced strawberry Kool-Aid straight from the canteen. And some days there'll be goofy grape. Anything to keep from choking on the purified water. But somehow I sensed all the while that I'd never be able to forgive myself for enjoying your company so much or being so good at the game we played. In our parks, there are whole other armies of veterans, mostly young and mostly old, but always ageless, who are not alone. They share with their families and their friends these open-aired, above-ground capsules of our national culture. They read aloud to themselves and their children from the plaques and statues, monuments and markers, those one-line truths of our common experience, as if there could be a real significance in words like love and hate tattooed on the clenched granite fists of America. Sometimes, when I am angry, it seems as if I could start my own country with the same 20 spill and spell words we shake out at the feet of our heroes like some crone spreading her hands over the runes prior to a mystic reading. Words like peace and sacrifice, war and young, supreme and duty, service and honor, country, nation, men and men again, sometimes God and don't forget women, Army, Air Force, Navy, and freedom. And then, just as quickly, the anger passes and reverence takes its place. Those are good words, noble words, solemn and sincere. It is the language of death which frightens me. It is unearthly to speak life concepts over the dead. Death is inarticulately final, refusing forever to negotiate. That and the awesome responsibility we place eternally on the teenage sons seems unbearably heavy against the lengthening, branching shadows of Sunday's frisbeers. Apparently, there is no period which can be placed after sacrifice. All life is struggle, an act of natural balance and indomitable courage. As it is with man, so it is with mankind. If we permit a Memorial Day to come to us every day, we ignore the concept of sacrifice and dilute its purpose. When we do that, we incur the responsibility to effect change. If we are successful, the sacrifice has renewed meaning. It seems there is no alternative to life, but there may be to war. And the values of our society seem to be distributed in our parks and reflected in the eyes of our veterans, who look there for validation and find only confusion and sadness. Strange, I have observed no monuments to survivors, no obelisk to mark the conflict of those who risked and lived, perhaps to fight again or perhaps to speak of peace. Nowhere yet a wall for the living. There is no wonder guilt is the sole survivor of war. We do not celebrate life after combat because our concept of glory lives neither in victory nor in peace, but in death. There are plaques at the doorsteps of skyscrapers, and in New York on 10th and the Avenue of the Americas, it reads, in memory of those from Greenwich Village who made the supreme sacrifice in the Korean conflict, 1950-1953. In Nashville Centennial Park, in a shaded wood to one side of the Parthenon, built to scale and to the glory which was Greece, a small statue stands. It is inscribed, I gave my best to make a better world, 1917-1918. I stood there one fall, ankle deep in leaves, and looked up in the night sky through a hole in the ceiling of trees, wondering how much better the world might look from up there. From the moon, only one man-made object can be viewed by the naked eye, the Great Wall of China, a tribute to man's functional paranoia. It is a peculiar perspective, because we're a hell of a lot closer, and the only man-made object we can see is the wall in Washington, D.C., a veteran's solemn pledge to remember. Well, there is one other wall, of course, one we never speak of, one we never see, one which separates memory from madness in a place no one offers flowers, the wall within. We permit no visitors. Mine looks like any of a million nameless brick walls. It stands in the tear-down ghetto of my soul, that part of me which reason avoids for fear of dirtying its clothes, and from atop which my sorrow and my rage hurl bottles and invectives at the rolled-up windows of my passing youth. Do you know the wall I mean? I learned of mine that night in the rain when I spoke at the memorial in Washington, and we all noticed how the wall ran like tears, and every man's name we found on the polished black granite face seemed to have our eyes staring back at us, crying. It was haunting. Later, I would realize I had caught the first glimpse of the wall within, and those tears were real. You and I do not walk about the wall within like Hamlet on the battlements. No one with our savvy would expose himself like that, especially to a frightened, angry man. Suicide loiters in our subconscious and bears a grudge. An assassin on hashish. We must be wary. Now, we sit there legless in our immobility, rolling precariously in our self-pity like ugly Humpty Dumpties, with disdain even for the king's horses, as we lean over the ledge to write upside down with chalk, bleach white from our special truths, the names of all the other casualties of the Vietnam War, our loved ones, the ones the Pentagon didn't put in uniform but died anyway. Some because they stopped being who they always were, just as truly as if they'd found another way to breathe. Others because they did die, honest to God casualties of the Vietnam War, because they lost the will to breathe at all. My mother gave her first recital at Carnegie Hall at age 11. Sometimes, when I was a boy, I'd watch her play the piano and wondered if God, after all, was not a woman. One evening when I was in the bush, she turned on the 6 o'clock news and died of a heart attack. My mother's name is on the wall within. You starting to get the idea? Our list might be different, but shoulder to shoulder, if we could find the right flat cloud on a perfect black night, we could project our images upon a God-sized drive-in theater wide enough to raise Ben-Hur across for 1,000 years. Because the wall within adds up the true cost of war. We can recite 58,012 in our sleep, even the day after they update it. But how many of those KIA had kids? And how many of those got nice stepdads? And whose wall do they go on? And what about you vets who came home to your wives and kids only to divorce her because there wasn't anybody else to be angry at? How many dimes have you long-distance fathers dropped into the slot to hear how another man was raising your kids? Yeah, yeah, I can hear you hollering to yourselves, put it on the wall, put it on the wall. Damn right it's on the wall. And you remember how that came down? You told the three-year-old his daddy loved him and his mommy loved him and nothing would ever change that. But it did anyway. But not because you didn't love him enough. Because you loved him too much to be a part-time daddy. And you couldn't explain that to him because you couldn't explain it to you. And what the hell, I mean, who were you, Spinoza? You came home from war, a 22-year-old machine gunner, for Christ's sake. You did the best you could. Put it on the wall. And somewhere, in an art gallery maybe, is a portrait of American grieving parenthood, hand-holding Rockwellian caricatures of wisdom and forbearance and, oh yes, pride, sitting on the front porch of the township, waving their lemonades at the Greyhound bus driver. Baloney. The names go up. Because every time you can't find mom, you damn well better call Doc Smith, because she's up on the second floor again, sitting on the floor in Johnny's closet, smelling his varsity sweater with the sleeves around his shoulders, sobbing something maybe only Johnny ever understood. But don't worry about Dad, who never fished again or watched a ball game on TV again and won't talk to anyone this year between the ages of 30 and 40. He's doing just fine. He doesn't exercise as much as he should. Doc Smith assures us there's no medical reason why the folks should have separate bedrooms. Dad just likes to read a lot these days. If you and I were men of common conscience, we might agree on a collective dedication to our walls within. But as for me, they could all read, this wall is dedicated to mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, wives, husbands, sons, daughters, lovers, friends, and most of all, dreams of the men and women who risked it all in Vietnam, while you continue to lose them during and after the war, with less a chance than they for a parade, and no chance at all for an explanation. You lost them to bullets, internment, drugs, suicide, alcohol, jail, post-traumatic stress, divorce, but never, never did any of you ever lose them to the truth, which is now being shared across this great nation in such an act of spontaneous moral courage, its like may never have been seen on any battlefield in the history of mankind. Amen to that, brother.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Mason.